now, I will turn the lectern over to John, who's going to speak with us this morning on Ruth, the handmaiden of the Lord.
Thanks, Nancy. It's always a great pleasure for me to be here with you. I'm flattered that you keep asking me back to renew friendships with many of you and with this congregation. But I never know what to talk about when I'm invited to preach here. You certainly don't want a regular Presbyterian sermon. If you did, you could walk half a block and find one every week. I know quite a lot about the history of Unitarianism from the 16th to the 19th century, and I've talked about that twice. I don't know a great deal about your denomination now, but I know a whole lot about where it came from. You were very polite when I talk about Unitarian history, but I'm not actually sure that you believe me. Most of us tend to think that we know more about ourselves than strangers from down the street would do. But you were very nice. I don't think you want me to do that again, so I'm not going to. The last couple of times, I've talked about Old Testament hero stories, and that seemed to go well, so we're going to do that again. I love these stories. That's how I learned to read. I had two grandmothers, one living in our home, the other a few blocks away, and they vied with each other in my young childhood as to who could get the most lap time with me reading Bible stories. So that is literally how I learned to read. Now I enjoy trying to make a serious theological point out of these ancient folk stories and hero stories, and to point out how we may learn from them. I had already decided to talk about the story of Ruth when I was told that your theme for these spring days is journeying. Ruth, a young refugee, came penniless from the land of Moab to Israel at a time when the admission of refugees and undocumented aliens who were not Jews was a political hot potato among the Hebrews. It's a very short book, only four chapters, about a 10-minute read. I'm not going to read the lesson this morning. At the Presbyterian Church, we have two, sometimes three, scripture lessons. That's not your style. But usually when I come here, I read something that I think is relevant to the story. But I'm not going to do that now. I'll quote enough, I'll tell the story as we go along, and quote enough to give you some sample of the beautiful flavor of the beautiful language. This is one of the best known and best loved stories in the Old Testament, and one of the most beautiful stories to be found anywhere in human literature. It's a typical short story with a once upon a time setting, and it also makes the obvious point, without ever actually saying so, that not all the ancient heroes were men. The margin notes of my Bible says that, quote, "The quiet, idyllic mood of the Book of Ruth and the charm of its gentle heroine have given it a special appeal to many generations of readers." Well, that's pure nonsense. It's true that the Book of Ruth has a special appeal for modern readers, but I'm not sure that Ruth herself ought to be described as a gentle heroine. She is a strong-willed, strong-minded, take-charge sort of woman who refused to accept the pathetic fate that was normal for a young widow in her culture. She also made an important contribution to the history of her adopted people. The story, though written down centuries later, is set in Israel in the time of the judges. This makes Ruth a contemporary of Gideon and Deborah and Samson, about 100 years after Moses and about 100 years before David. The social and political scene that is depicted in the story is that of a primitive agricultural society. There are no priests here, no temple, no king, no central government of any kind. The nation of Israel is merely a confederation of tribes, united and distinguished from its neighbors only by an allegiance to a God whom they called Yahweh. That's the setting of the book, but it was actually written centuries later, after the Hebrews returned from exile in Babylon, about the fourth century before Christ. Its literary contemporaries, therefore, are Ezra and Nehemiah and Jonah. The book of Ruth, like the book of Jonah, offers a minority correction to the very exclusive theology of post-exilic Judaism. The universalism that is taught by the great prophets, Isaiah's assurance, for example, that the glory of the Lord shall be revealed and all flesh shall see it together. This has long been forgotten. The Hebrews and their religion had become nationalistic, exclusive, and insular. And the writer of this story told the Hebrews, living in Jerusalem in the 4th century BC, that many centuries before, in the time of the judges, a Moabite woman had married a Hebrew man with God's blessing. In fact, this woman became an ancestor of the great King David. We've got 3 points already. One, that God uses ordinary folks like Ruth to achieve his will through the ordinary events of their daily lives. God's will is not achieved just by the activities of kings and presidents and saints and prophets. Second, in God's scheme of things, women as well as men have important roles to play. That is not true in our church anymore, and never was true in your church. But in some religious communities, women are still given only subordinate roles. Those churches don't read the book of Ruth, I assume. The third point of the story, the one which was probably the original author's main intention, is that God is not an exclusive God concerned only about the Hebrews. God is a universal God whose purpose is to reveal himself to all humanity. And God is perfectly willing to use a young woman from Moab to assume this purpose. The story goes like this. Once upon a time, there was a bad harvest near Bethlehem, and a man named Elimelech traveled to Moab in search of better pasture. He was accompanied by his wife, Naomi, and their 2 sons. Everything went well for a while, but in time, Elimelech died. Naomi, his widow, was cared for by her 2 adult sons, who in the meantime had married local girls. So far, all is well. But then both the sons died. This turns the story into a tragedy. For now there were 3 widows, Naomi and her 2 daughters-in-law. And there was no employable male in the family. You need to realize that in that society, a widow had no means of support except her adult sons or her late husband's brothers. A young widow with no adult sons, especially if she had no brothers-in-law, was truly a pathetic case, an object of public charity. In the circumstance of this tragedy, Naomi decided to return to her ancestral home in Israel and suggested to her 2 daughters-in-law that they should go back to their birth families, hoping that their brothers or whoever was there would take care of them. Perhaps, she suggested, they might be able to remarry since they were young and had no children. But all acknowledged that this was unlikely since their dowry had already been spent. A woman normally did not receive any inheritance when her father died, but she received her share of her father's inheritance when she married, so that was the dowry. And these girls had already gotten theirs and there was no more to be had, which reduced their marriage prospects. This is the occasion for one of, well, no, going back a little bit, one of the daughters-in-law took Naomi's good advice and returned to her parents' home. But the other one, Ruth, decided to go back to Israel with Naomi. And this is the occasion for one of the most beautiful prose passages in the Bible. In the King James Version, it's one of the most beautiful pieces of English literature. "Entreat me not to leave thee, or to return from following after thee. For whither thou goest, I will go, and whither thou lodgest, I will lodge. Thy people shall be my people, and thy God, my God. Where thou diest, will I die, and there will I be buried. The Lord do so to me, and more also, if aught but death shall part thee and me." This beautiful passage is often read at weddings in our church. I usually assume that no one in the church except me knows that it was spoken by a daughter-in-law to a mother-in-law. I never tell anyone that. But it's appropriate to read at a wedding, I suppose, because it does describe the quintessence of human love. There is also grace in this passage, and considerable faith and courage. There are good reasons, then, to read it at weddings. And so Ruth went with her mother-in-law. She had no security, no possessions, no vision, no promise of eternal blessing. This is an astounding leap of faith and an appropriate contribution to your interest in journeying this month. So we have two women, Ruth and Naomi, returned to Bethlehem. But there was no joy in this homecoming. Naomi was mired in grief and self-pity. "God has cursed me. My husband and sons are all dead. My daughter-in-law and I are here alone with no support and no protection. God has sentenced me to poverty and misery." Naomi's grief, which is understandable, took the form of bitterness and anger, which are not all that rare, but not all that helpful either. She, like many before and since, lashed out at God in her anger. But not so Ruth. She said, "I'm not going to rely on the uncertain mercies of public charity. I've got to do something about this." So she went into the fields to glean. I bet you've seen pictures of Ruth gleaning. She went to work, doing the only respectable work that was available to her. There was a practice in ancient Israel, sort of an early version of supply-side economics, which required that the poor be allowed to pick up wheat and barley and other grain that had fallen to the ground during the harvest. So Ruth went to get something for supper. As luck would have it, she went to a field owned by a man named Boaz. Or was it luck? God is not very much present in this story, but God is always there, always acting, this time through the apparent coincidence of Ruth going to Boaz's field rather than someone else's. Boaz, it turned out, was a distant relative of Naomi's late husband. He was also a wealthy man. The attractive young woman gleaning in his field caught his eye, and he asked someone who she was, and his workers told him the story of Naomi and Ruth. So Boaz really gave Ruth the red carpet treatment. First, he told his workers to drop extra grain for her, more than would normally fall to the ground. Then he went out himself and told Ruth that she was welcome to glean in his field whenever she wanted. He told her, "I've heard of all that you have done for Naomi. I've also heard how you came to our country and embraced our God. For your kindness to Naomi, may you be regarded by God under his wings, whom you have called to help." Then Ruth said to Boaz, "May I continue to find favor in your eyes, because you have comforted me." So we can tell that sparks are beginning to fly. something is going on here. Anyway, Ruth went back home with a very large bag of barley, and a wonderful story to tell Naomi, who was very impressed. She began to come out of her gloom and depression. She said to Ruth, "Blessed be the Lord, whose kindness has not forsaken us." She also told Ruth that Boaz was a distant relative, which Ruth had not known, and that a man who might properly be expected to take care of them, even though he had no legal obligation to do so. "He is one of our circle of redeemers," is the way Naomi put it. And that's what redemption means in the Old Testament. When Old Testament people call God Redeemer, it means that they put themselves under God's protection. God takes responsibility for them. But this is by no means the end of the story. Naomi, formerly paralyzed by grief and depression, is suddenly galvanized into action. She perceived what Boaz and Ruth may not have even understood themselves. A romance was brewing. Naomi concocted an elaborate plot, the details of which need not detain us here. They're quite complicated and long. And she put the wheels of matrimony in motion. No longer was she moping around, bewailing her unjust fate. There was a wedding to plan. Ruth thought this was a good idea as well, but Boaz was entirely innocent of the whole scheme. And he had to be slowly brought on board. I'll spare you the details of that courtship. Safe to say that Ruth, in an entirely honorable way, made herself available to him for his romantic entreaties. The war man was torpedoed before he knew what was happening. He'd already agreed to take financial responsibility for Ruth and Naomi, but marriage had never occurred to him. Eventually, Ruth proposed to him, to use a modern term, and he happily accepted her suggestion of marriage. The marriage was, of course, a big event in town. Ruth, the Moabite woman, was immediately accepted by the society mavens in Bethlehem. May the Lord make Ruth like Leah and Rachel, who together built up the house of Israel. May you prosper and be renowned in Israel because of the children that the Lord will give you. Because Ruth had borne no children in her first marriage, and because Boaz was just a few years shy of Social Security, this was no idle prayer. This was a genuine concern. And the whole story ends amid great joy and excitement. Ruth and Boaz have a baby, a boy named Obed. The local women, of course, are overjoyed. But the spotlight falls not on either Ruth or the baby, but on Naomi. And the story of her story, which began as a tragedy, ended in great joy. Ruth let Naomi look after the baby, and Naomi became the most enthusiastic grandmother in history. The ladies of the circle gathered around Naomi and exclaimed, "Blessed be the Lord who has provided a redeemer for you. This child shall be a life restorer for you and will nourish you in your old age. For Ruth, your daughter-in-law, who loved you, means more to you than seven sons." This is an extraordinary statement coming from that patriarchal society where sons were regarded as much more important than daughters. Ruth showed such incredible kindness to Naomi that the village women said that she was better to her than seven sons. The woman's cries in the story, "A son has been born to Naomi." And that's the end of the story, but there's an epilogue. A genealogy is attached at the end. Obed becomes the father of Jesse, the father of David, King David. So Ruth, the Moabite woman, an adult convert, became the great-grandmother of the great King David. A young foreign woman who showed the Hebrews what their God was like by the way that she showed love to her adopted people. A young woman who gives us a beautiful and memorable picture of the grace of God, the nurturing love of God, which is naturally embodied in the feminine. And that's the end of the book of Ruth. But of course, that's not really the end of the story. Matthew also gives us a genealogy. This is a genealogy of Jesus. Many of the biblical writers know what revolutionary women in our country also know, that genealogy is an important form of history. Matthew and Luke both give us genealogies of Jesus, taking up several precious Bible pages to do so. And Matthew is at great pains to trace the ancestry of Jesus back through David to Abraham. Ruth was not only the great-grandmother of David, she was also the ancestor of Jesus. And in Matthew's genealogy, there are the great heroes of faith, like Abraham and David. There are also a lot of shady characters, just as there are in your genealogy and mine. There's a prostitute named Rahab, and an adulteress named Bathsheba. There are scores of anonymous women and men whose stories we know nothing about and whose names we never hear again. And there's Ruth, a young girl from Moab, whose faith, whose courage, whose love shines in Scripture as one of the most beautiful descriptions to be found any place of the way in which God's grace and God's love is transmitted and communicated through the way that we live. For the story of Ruth is a story of God's grace, how God works through the good in each one of us, how God's grace is generally communicated to men and women, not by heavenly voices, not normally through burning bushes, not very often by angels singing in the sky, but normally through the quiet day-to-day activity of ordinary people who show extraordinary kindness and consideration and unselfishness to each other. Ruth, the handmaiden of the Lord, the personification of God's grace. Amen.